We gotta do something.
Absolutely.
You know what we gotta do?
Toga party.
We're on double secret probation, whatever that is. We can't afford to have a toga party.
You guys up for a toga party?
Toga! Toga!
I think they like the idea, Hoove.
Oh, Otter, please don't do this.
We got news for you, pal. They're gonna nail us no matter what we do. So we might as well have a good time.
Toga! 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 Toga!
The Berkshire International Film Festival is presenting a special cast reunion and screening of National Lampoon's Animal House, the classic comedy from 1978, on Saturday night. Members of Faber College's infamous class of 1963, including Karen Allen, Peter Riegert, Mart Metcalf, Martha Smith, Jamie Widows, and Judy Belushi, will be in attendance following the film for Q&A and a performance by Otis Day to complete the evening at the Mahawy Performing Arts Center in Great Barrington. Also in attendance will be the man who was at the helm of the film, director John Landis. Landis became famous for his work on Animal House, going on to direct such films as The Blues Brothers, An American Werewolf in London, Trading Places, Coming to America, and The Three Amigos. It is a great pleasure to welcome John Landis to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
When it comes to these reunions and bringing the cast together and looking at a film like this so many years later, what is that like for you as the director?
Well, that's several questions, really. Once you make a movie, it's often hard to separate the experience of making the movie from the movie itself. So when I see movies, you know, there are all kinds of reactions. I've made a lot of movies. And usually, I just look at them. I see mistakes, or I see things I do differently. And I've never had a cast reunion. The only movie I ever had a cast reunion before was, in fact, Animal House, which on the 25th anniversary of Animal House, which is a number of years ago now, there was, at least that I was there was a big cast reunion. Most of the cast was there. Several of them passed on since then. But I remember very well Martha Smith, who plays Babs in the movie, who will be with us in the Berkshires.
Right.
Martha at the time said, you know, if we ever do another cast reunion, we're going to have to retitle the movie and call it Animal Home.
So even at this point, do you still see what you would have done differently, see mistakes or nuances, or do you watch it at a level that is far removed now and you can enjoy it as the audiences have enjoyed it over the past decades?
Well, both. I mean, that's always true regardless. But I haven't seen it in years, so that'll be interesting. You know, you don't watch your old movies, but it's a movie that we were all so young. And it was really a wonderful experience for everybody, really across the board. The studio was freaking out, but we were in Eugene, Oregon, far removed. And it was only shot in 30 days. And the vast majority of the cast had never been in a film before. And, you know, it was my first studio movie with union crew. It was very exciting and fun.
How did it come to be made in the first place under the label of National Lampoon?
Well, because Mattie Simmons was the publisher of the National Lampoon, and the truth is, at one point, Douglas Kenny, who was one of the founders of the National Lampoon, Doug Kenny and Henry Beard, they came from the Harvard Lampoon, and Mattie was the financier. And then the magazine was really successful. Doug was always threatening to leave. He always wanted to leave, and he really was the genius behind everything. And Mattie knew that Doug was enamored of the movies. And he literally, when Doug came in and said, "I quit, I can't do this anymore," Mattie said, "But we're going to make a movie." And Doug went, "Really?" So that's how it started. And originally, this is long before I was involved, this was in New York, and originally, Doug wrote a script with Harold Ramis about Charles Manson in high school called Laser Orgy Girls. And it was pretty insane. And Mattie brought in Ivan Reitman, who was a young Canadian producer who had worked with the Lampoon producing off-Broadway shows. And, you know, the National Lampoon's theater stuff was amazing. It had John Belushi produced the radio show. And you had people in Lemmings. The cast was John Belushi, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, Gilda Radner, Christopher Guest. It was just Alice Playton. I mean, amazing. And this is years and years before Saturday Night Live. Ivan then said, you know, we'll never get this made. This is insane. I mean, it really was outrageous. And Doug had written, and they had published the very successful and brilliant parody high school yearbook, where many of the characters come from in Animal House. And they said, well, we'll do that. So they, Harold and Doug then wrote a treatment for a movie set in a college. Again, this is long before I'm involved. And when Maddie Simmons read it, he said, oh, my goodness, you can't do this. You know, make him do it in college. Because I'm sorry, they had said it in high school. And he said, oh, gosh, do it in college. And Chris Miller, who was a writer at the Lampoon, who was in a fraternity at Dartmouth and actually wrote stories, outrageous fictional stories about his frat brothers, the three of them got together, and they wrote the first draft of Animal House. And there were two young executives at Universal at the time. Ned Tannen was head of production. He was the head of the movie part of Universal. And his assistant was Tom Mount and a guy named Sean Daniel. And they were kids. And they read this script, and they thought it was the greatest thing because it was so funny. And they desperately tried to make it for, like, over a couple of years, I think. And so they optioned it. Universal optioned it. Ned just hated it. It's kind of remarkable to think, but they sent it to directors like John Schlesinger and Mike Nichols and Alan Pakula, all of whom read it, George Roy Hill, and basically threw it back, going, what are you, crazy? So I was making this independent little movie called Kentucky Fried Movie.
Right.
And the continuity person on that was a girl named Catherine Wooten Boots. And her boyfriend at the time was Sean Daniel. And Sean was saying, you know, everyone keeps rejecting this script, and I think it'll make a funny movie. And Boots said, hey, you know, you should come to see the movie that I'm working on because it's wacky and nuts. And Sean came to the cutting room. And it's still amazing for me to think of this, but, you know, Kentucky Fried Movie and Animal House were made the same year.
Right.
And they hired me originally to supervise a rewrite because the screenplay was raucous and really funny, but it was also very much like the Harvard Lampoon. And, you know, it was misogynist, it was racist, it was anti-Semitic in some ways that were very rough-edged. And I read it, and I said, look, you know, this is brilliant, but everyone can't be a pig. You have to have good guys. And it was very much Doug Kenny and Harold Ramis and Chris Miller's script, but I supervised the rewrite where we made we put all the sympathetic guys in one fraternity and then put, you know, the bad guys in another. And basically, it's still their stuff, but I sort of tweened it up in many ways and made it more palatable. I mean, for instance, I was very lucky to get John Belushi because Bluto, as written, is a monster. And I realized, you know, John, he was a marvelous actor and a sweet person, and he had this great ability to be sweet. I don't know any other word.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
And it ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Who's with me? Let's go! Come on!
And I told John, here's your marching orders. This Bluto, I mean, he's Bacchus, but he really is the Cookie Monster and Harpo Marx because he's all appetite. And what Harpo and the Cookie Monster share is they're really sweet and completely destructive. So John took that and ran with it. And he's, you know, and we only had him, we shot 4 weeks, less than 4 weeks, but we only had John 3 days, oh, not even that, like 2.5 days a week, because he was commuting from Oregon to New York to be on Saturday Night Live.
And what was there about his performance and the performance, just the overall idea, that has struck a chord with audiences for so long? Is it that the universality of college, of that raucous behavior, and sort of a want on many people's part to have that type of behavior?
Well, two things. One, the picture was, we shot it in 78, and it's important to remember that it was set in 1963. By making it period, it allowed us to literally get away with stuff that we couldn't have done contemporary, because it was seen through this haze, you know, this gauze of nostalgia. Also, a lot of it's really a parody in ways of An American Graffiti, which was a huge hit and so sentimental, wonderful movie, very sentimental. And we were a little more cynical about the whole thing. And people forget the politics of it. I mean, it's 1963, it's on, you know, the 60s, and it ends in civil insurrection and chaos. And, you know, I think it was such a huge hit, and it remains because of two things. Somehow the movie captures that moment in your life, you know, between 18 and 21, when you're not an adult, but you think you are, and you're still very much a child.
Right.
And that independence, that sense of freedom and exploration and questioning, and you'll hear many people talk about the best years of their lives were either college or the military, you know? And I thought, what do they have in common? And I realized 18 to 21, and it's these formative years. It's the first time you're really independent.
So you're 27, 28 years old when you're making this movie. As you mentioned, the actors are all young and starting out. So just in that, you're not that far removed from the experience yourself.
Well, I was 27 when I made it, and I'm a very bad example because I'm a high school dropout. I mean, when I was 18, well, when I was younger than that, I was a mail boy at 20th Century Fox. I was desperate to be near production, and I went to Europe to work on as a gopher, which is now called production assistant, but then they were schleppers or gophers, on a movie called Kelly's Heroes, big MGM World War II comedy with Clint Eastwood and Telly Savalas and Don Rickles and Don Sutherland and the Yugoslav Army playing Nazis and GIs. It was a huge movie. And that's when I was 18. Now, those 9 months were like, that was very seminal for me. And then I went to Europe, and Spain rather, where there was a production boom and worked a lot of movies and eventually came back. It's a long story. But my military experience basically is Kelly's Heroes. And my college experience is Animal House, literally.
Right.
But Doug Kenny, Chris Miller, and Harold Ramis were in three different schools in 1963, all in frats. And so they really, you know, they lived through it. And it's all based on real things.
You come out of that film. At what point did you realize, had you already moved on to the Blues Brothers before you knew that Animal House was a hit?
Oh, no. Blues Brothers was because Animal House was it.
Okay.
But I actually didn't have high expectations for the movie. I was just excited to be directing. Looking back, I mean, other people, everything about everything, really, is Rashomon. Everyone has their own very subjective point of view. And when you're involved with something that becomes iconic and classic and generates so much money and stuff, suddenly everybody, I did it. Everyone takes credit for everything. And when you're involved with something that's a financial disaster or critical disaster, Hitchcock said that the director's real function is to take the blame. You know, and there's 400 people to take the credit. But I had no idea the picture would be such a sensation. You know who the only person, when we were shooting, that I know of that thought this is something was John Vernon, who played Dean Wormer. And John was a very serious actor, you know, out of the Shakespeare Festival in Canada. He came to Hollywood to be in Point Blank, was his first movie, and played all these serious roles. And my original hope for Dean Wormer was Jack Webb, who I had a very good lunch with. He drank a lot of scotch and smoked a lot of cigarettes. And, you know, here I am with this long, skinny kid with long hair and a beard, and there's Jack Webb, who's basically a fascist. And, he thought, are you insane? You know.
Yeah.
So I didn't get him. And then I saw a movie that had just come out called The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Sure.
And, well, John's the bad guy with a big black beard and those piercing blue eyes.
Right.
And I thought, Dean Wormer! And studio was very unhappy that I cast him. Studio was very unhappy with my cast, period, except for John Belushi. In fact, Animal House would not have gotten made because Ned Tanen hated the cat, hated, you know, I had so many unknowns. I mean, Karen Allen, Kevin Bacon, Peter Rieger, you know, I mean, literally Bruce McGill, I mean, Tommy Hulse. Most of this cast had never been in a movie before. And Jamie Widows, I mean, so many of them. And Ned literally called me to his office and he said, look, I need a movie star. If you don't have a movie star, we're not going. And this is, you know, like 5 weeks before we're supposed to go to Oregon and shoot. And the only big movie star that I had a friendship with, I was, still a punk, was Don Sutherland.
Yeah.
Because I knew Don. I met Donald Sutherland when I was a mailboy and they were shooting MASH on the lot. And then 2 years later, I spent 9 months with him in Yugoslavia. I actually babysat for Kiefer once. And it was like, I call him up. I go, Don, you have to do this for me. and he did, a day and a half's work on the movie. And originally in the script, he just had the one scene where with the dope smoking. So when I got Don, I said, Doug Kenny, we have to give him another scene. So Doug wrote actually one of my favorite scenes in the movie where you meet him and he's giving his lecture on Milton.
Okay. Don't write this down, but I find Milton probably as boring as you find Milton. Mrs. Milton found him boring, too. He's a little bit long-winded. He doesn't translate very well into our generation, and his jokes are terrible. But that does not relieve you from your responsibility for this material. Now, I'm waiting for reports from some of you. I'm not joking. This is my job.
It's a great scene. As far as the reunion that'll be taking place on Saturday night, Karen Allen, Peter Riegert, Mart Metcalf, Martha Smith, Jamie Widows, and Judy Belushi will be there as well. So a lot of people with a great association.
I think Otis Day and the Knights will be there.
Otis Day and the Knights will be in attendance and will be performing as well.
This is a true story. So Otis Day and the Knights is fictional. It was an invention by the screenwriters because there were three groups whose names I can't say on the radio who toured the Northeast frats and in the Ivy League days, and black acts who had outrageous names and did all these great music. And for Otis Day and the Knights, this is a very low-budget movie. In fact, do you know who the highest-paid person on the whole movie was?
No.
The horse.
Really?
Well, because you had to pay the fee for the horse, you had to pay two teamsters, you had to pay the trainer, you had to schlep it to Oregon, you had to house it. I think the horse cost like $120,000. So the horse, they made more money than anybody. But anyway, Otis Day and the Night. So a professional studio musicians recorded the song in L.A. Singer was a guy named Mark Davis, and we recorded that, and I hired Dwayne Jesse, who's a wonderful actor. He was in Car Wash, he was in, so many movies, Bingo Long, he was in many films, a wonderful actor, and I cast Dwayne to play Otis, and he came up to Oregon, you know, he had that ridiculous conk wig, and he looked great, and then I had to get the Knights. We didn't have enough money to bring people from Los Angeles. So We advertised on campus at the University of Oregon in Eugene for African Americans who could play instruments and who would be willing to get their hair straightened. And that's who the Knights are. They're students, one of whom, the lead, who gets a close-up, the lead guitar player, who was a student at the University of Oregon, you might know now as Robert Cray.
Right.
Wonderful musician. Anyway,
absolutely.
The reason I'm telling you this is so they lip-synced to the playback and we shot it. About 5 years later, I started hearing people would say to me, oh, wow, I saw Otis Day and the Knights. They're so great. And I would have to look at them and go, you know they don't exist. These are fictional creations. No, no, they came to my school or I saw them in this club. And this went on for like 10 or 12 years. And I thought, this is so weird, you know. And then at the 25th cast reunion, there's Dwayne. And I found out that Dwayne had changed his name. He's been touring as Otis Day ever since.
Sure. Why screw up the marketing? Yeah, that makes sense. You went on to so many the films I mentioned in the introduction, but obviously Blues Brothers, An American Werewolf in London, Spies Like Us, Three Amigos, Coming to America, Beverly Hills Cop 3, the list goes on.
You're Trading Places.
Well, I wanted to get to Trading Places because when I was growing up in Philadelphia in the 1980s, and I remember vividly, I was a huge fan of yours. I was a huge fan of film, and I remember just begging my dad to go down and see when you guys were shooting this film. And I remember vividly sitting on the side of I think it may have been Walnut, and we're sitting there, and I looked at my dad, and I said, "Look, oh my God, that's John Landis," and he looked at me and he said, "I don't know who that is, but oh my God, that's Don Ameche."
Pay up, Mortimer. I've won the bet.
Here, $1.
A waiter, a perfectly useless psychopath like Valentine, and turned him into a successful executive. And during the same time, we turned an honest, hardworking man into a violently deranged would-be killer.
That's a wonderful story.
I was very excited.
Were we shooting?
Yeah, well, you were getting ready to shoot a scene right outside the brokerage firm there.
Oh, great.
It was fascinating.
How old were you?
Oh, God. I was probably 16 years old. The Animal House reunion, this is going to be a fantastic evening. It's Saturday night, 7 o'clock at the Mahawi Theater, and it's all part of the Berkshire International Film Festival, a cast reunion and a screening of Animal House. John Landis was the director of that film. He'll be on hand with all wonderful actors, as I mentioned, Karen Allen, Peter Riegert, Mart Metcalf, Martha Smith, Jamie Widows. Your wife will be there talking about
the costume design. You could have your listeners look her up. I mean, they're very lucky that she's coming. She designed almost all of my films. I remember the day she had those press-on letters and held up a sweatshirt that said college on it and said, "Do you think this is funny?" And you know what? John wore it in the film. And Universal still sells those sweatshirts. But Deborah designed Raiders of the Lost Ark, many, many films, and she's going to give a talk, too.
That's great, and that'll be happening.
You know, and she designed Thriller.
Yeah, the Michael Jackson video, Thriller, as you directed.
Yes.
Hollywood Costume is April 24th at 7 o'clock, and then on the 25th at 7, it's the Animal House reunion. You can find out more information about all of the events by going to mahawi.org, mahawi.org. John Landis, a great pleasure to speak with you. It'll be great to see you on Saturday night. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
You know you make me wanna kick my head.